Moncrief on News Talk.
See, Dina understands me, like she's my kid or something. But she's not.
Neither is Ellie. Tell you what. Let's try something different.
Like what?
Oh, like not pretending you have the most boring problem in the world. Oh, 19-year-old daughter. She's acting toward me like every 19-year-old daughter has ever acted toward their dad, ever. What is this, our fifth session? Are you just going to keep grouching on like this every time?
Aren't you supposed to be validating me or something?
Oh, yeah.
That is a clip from the last of us new episodes of season two every Monday on Sky Atlantic, and James Dempsey would have told us more. James, you have to say, listening to that, it doesn't sound like a zombie thriller, does it?
Well, I mean, the zombies are in the background.
Yeah, right. They're very in the background, aren't they?
They are very in the background. Look, I mean, I won't deny that there are a couple of action set pieces in this episode, as you can expect in any episode. Yeah. But I think the creators of the show, that is to say Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann, who are probably best known for making Chernobyl, would say that this is not a zombie show. They don't like to use the word zombie. In fact, the kind of nomenclature of The Last of Us is infected, I think.
Okay.
But it isn't a show that's about infected either. They would say that really it's a drama about the emotions between those left behind.
Set in the world of the infected.
Set it very much in the world of the infected.
Yeah. I suppose you should tell people a little bit, because there might be people that this went past The Last of Us.
And it's been a long time since it aired. I mean, it's 2 years since the first season debuted and came to an end. It is set, so it is based on a PlayStation computer game made by Naughty Dog, as the name of the production company that produced it, a hugely successful one that is lauded as much for like its dramatic cutscenes as well as its gameplay. And the first season is essentially a zombie, quote unquote, survival show in which it opens with our main character played by Pedro Pascal. He plays Joel Miller. And in this opening episode, which is absolutely breathtakingly exciting, the initial outbreak is happening. I think it's set roughly 20 years ago in our timeline, and the current season is set like in 29 or 2029 maybe.
Okay.
And there's this zombie apocalypse that takes place through fungus. So the Cordyceps fungus takes root in Jakarta, and there's this excellent cold open to the second episode where we have this scientific advisor in Jakarta saying, well, just bomb everything, right? And then it goes worldwide thanks to, you know, globalization and supply lines, and suddenly half the world's population is infected with this fungus that turns them into a variety of different kinds of zombies, and everyone else is running around getting killed. And then we flash forward, I think, 20 years to which where we find Joel then trying to do this classic bring a girl around the country and avoid getting eaten mission.
And she is immune to...
She is immune, yes.
No one knows why.
So she is played by Bella Ramsey, who people will probably best know if they haven't seen The Last of Us Season 1 from Game of Thrones, where they had a very pivotal role in the final couple of seasons of that. And listen, this is really, really good. It's very well made. It's very dramatic. It's very exciting. It's also quite funny. That's what I like about it, right? Yeah. As in, it has these absolute shades of misery. I mean, like post-apocalyptic survival misery, where people are eking out a brutal, bloody, violent existence. And then like quite good and funny jokes as well, right? So that's what I liked about it. Now, what I will say is my thoughts on season one were, I thought it absolutely peaked at the beginning. Like the first two, three episodes are absolutely breathtakingly exciting and dramatic and funny and interesting and scary. And then for me, it kind of petered more towards the end of the first season.
Sure.
So like any normal person, I then went straight onto YouTube and watched the entire cutscenes of the two video games back to back and spent about 3 hours watching them.
Okay.
So I have had season two spoiled for me, and I know what is coming down the pipeline.
Right.
But that was an intentional self-harm, so
okay,
I'm okay
enough
with this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But all in, season two promises, you know, a bigger, what always happens in a second season, darker, more grim exploration of this world, right? So we know it's set 5 years on. The events that happened at the end of season one are pivotal to what happens in season two. And we're reintroduced to Joel, to Ellie, to a bunch of new characters who we heard in the clip there was Catherine O'Hara of Schitt's Creek fame, playing a therapist who has, let's say, an axe to grind against Joel as well. Joining the cast as well, you have young Mazzino, if you saw Beef on Netflix, maybe, you know, last year or the year before, about the argument between this road rage argument between two different people. Anyway, he's brilliant in that. You have Isabella Merced, if you saw Alien Romulus. She was the pregnant woman who really had quite a miserable time on Alien Romulus.
Yeah.
She plays Dina, a friend of Ellie. And then you have perhaps the biggest addition to the cast in terms of the role she has to play, Caitlin Dever, who you would have seen doing her best Aussie accent in Apple Cider Vinegar.
She was great in that.
Playing Abby. Now, she was originally considered for Ellie for season one, and I think they kind of thought it's probably too old for the role. But here she's playing Abby, who is a role that I really can't say more about because it would be a massive spoiler.
Okay.
But look, all in, this, as the first episodes go, sort of setting the scene of how time has moved on, where all our chess pieces are on the board, and, you know, creating a bit of spectacle and danger. I really liked it.
And still central to it is the relationship between Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of the go-to guy for, like, shepherding a younger person through a dangerous thing. I mean, he's done this before in both The Mandalorian and other projects as well. And he's about to go stratospheric this year with the Fantastic Four, you know, the new, in whether or not he can actually help salvage the MCU and the current phase it's in is unknown. But if you thought he was a big star now, he's about to get even bigger.
Wow. He's great, though. He's hard not to like. He's very magnetic.
He's lovely. And he seems very likable. He's very funny, very charming guy.
And so is Bella Ramsey, as we said, too.
Absolutely.
Both of them. Well, brilliant. So, I mean, high expectation on this, and you weren't disappointed by the first episode?
No, absolutely not disappointed. And I think it's worth saying that, like, the first season achieved this alchemical thing of being an adaptation of a computer game that people actually really, really, really liked.
It took a lot of people a while to get their head around that. Because for a certain generation, the idea of a game based on a video or a film based on a video game is very low.
But I would say it's the first of more to come. And if you haven't seen Fallout on Amazon Prime, it's excellent as well.
And people, I think the point being made, though, is that a lot of people have no idea how amazing these video games are and how well written they are.
And even how much better they're going to get over the next 10 years.
Yeah, so suck it up, I think, is the message to you there. Right. On we go to another absolute phenomenon, it has to be said. A show that started off on Channel 4, very much on a how can Channel 4 afford this kind of show, and is now on Netflix, and it's just one of the most talked about shows on TV. It is Black Mirror, and we have a clip from it.
I've entered the coordinates. We're going to go in.
Okay, how do we do this?
You don't know how to play your own company's game?
No. How do we...
Do what I do. Enter game.
Oh, that's fun. Enter game as well.
By the way, there are six standalone episodes, aren't there? So which
seven,
one was
I think. Seven. Or six, you're right, sorry.
Which
six.
One was that from? Do you know?
That was from USS Callister Into Infinity, which is, as far as I can tell, the first sequel episode ever. Right.
Okay.
So it's arguably the three biggest breakout ones in the Black Mirror kind of roster are San Junipero, Bandersnatch and USS Callister, all of which won Emmys for, you know, two Emmys basically for each, for like best writing and best TV film, let's say.
Sure.
And this is a sequel directly to that, which is kind of a riff on the Star Trek universe. Very, very, very funny.
Very
and
good.
A welcome return to that world. Thing about Black Mirror is, as you said, it's an unlikely Channel 4 show. Not because Channel 4 doesn't champion kind of unusual shows. It's just that this is an incredibly expensive show to make. To make an anthology series means no recycling of sets, no recycling of casts, different crews pretty much for every single project because they might be filming simultaneously in order to meet the schedule demands. And Charlie Brooker originally broke through as a kind of dramatic writer with this very, very good show. It's probably on the Channel 4, RT player, I don't know what it's called now anyway, anymore these days. A show called Dead Set, which was a zombie.
There
thing,
we go.
Right? Set on the set of Big Brother, where the housemates didn't realize a zombie apocalypse is taking place outside, which was a very Black Mirror kind of, thing or plot device. And he wrote then these three standalone episodes and threaded them together as a kind of critique of technology. And Channel 4 took a punt on it. And really, it's John Hamm who perhaps brought it to global attention when he signed on to appear in the Christmas special, which was the first season of the second episode. And I think then Channel 4 just couldn't afford to keep making it, in the sense that Netflix offered a lot more money and a lot more creative control to Charlie Brooker, and he's been very much at home since then. Now, it's been, the thing about it is, some episodes are just better than others, right? That's the way it goes with anthology series, and the same is the case here, but you cannot deny the amount of talent that he's just able to kind of accrue in his cast. I mean, the cast for this run includes Rashida Jones, Chris O'Dowd, Tracy Ellis Ross, Issa Rae, Awkwafina, Emma Corrin, Harriet Walter, Peter Capaldi, Paul Giamatti, to name many others. Now, my favourite of them was probably Eulogy, which is the Paul Giamatti one, which also feels perhaps the most prescient of all of them. I was in London recently and I tried on the, I was in the Apple store and I tried on their kind of VR goggles. I can't quite remember what they were called, but they're the very impressive immersive technology that I cannot afford yet, right? Because eventually the prices will come down. And this is a story in which a man who is, he's sent a kind of a package that includes the ability to go into old photographs to help form the eulogy of a faded love that he had fallen out with and who had passed away. And it was like the best of the Black Mirror episodes, not just, oh, technology is evil, technology is evil. It was a more nuanced look at actually how technology might ingratiate itself into our lives and how it might lead us to reflect on the way we have lived and how we will go forward in that. I also have to give number one on the list, Common People, with Rashida Jones and Chris O'Dowd, a special mention. That one I found very effective, very, very interesting. It's about a couple who have to turn to a subscription service in order for the wife to stay alive, but they keep upping the price of the subscription. So at one point she is spouting ads out of her mouth to the various people in her life.
Really?
Yeah, I thought that one was really kind of well thought through and clever.
Oh, that's brilliant.
The rest of them I kind of liked and didn't like in equal measure. I'm not a Black Mirror purist. Like, I don't watch it for the many Easter eggs that they have as, you know, paying homage to different shows in the story in Black Mirror's past. But all in, if you're looking for Black Mirror, you will be very... And if you are one of those people, you will really enjoy this one.
Right. I've seen you describe it as a grim episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, I just often think like you're waiting for just the worst of the worst things to happen, right? Like, is it in Curb Your Enthusiasm, something bad is always going to happen, Larry.
Yes.
And here it's just like, oh, what terrible thing is going to like happen to these people's lives and often end their lives.
Yeah, Inside Number 9, I think it's a bit like that too. And he's still using that kind of premise, is he? Of it's all the technology.
I mean, that's the frame. So Black Mirror, I think, refers to like a blank phone screen that you are looking at, right, as a consumer of technology. Yeah. And definitely that is what you're getting with these. It is a satirical look at the role of technology. But in truth, in the past, he's been very prescient with his kind of perceptions of where technology is going. He's usually about 3 years ahead of what's in our pocket.
What a gift. Amazing. Now, a texter in saying Black Mirror is muck. It is a bit divisive, isn't it?
It's very divisive, but I find him a kind of interesting character. Like, Charlie Brooker began his career as an artist making ads for, you know, CEX, the kind of the secondhand technology thing. So he put print ads, he designed the print ads of those that went into a gaming magazine. They liked his ad so much they hired him to become a reviewer of the game. So he started off as a computer reviewer. And I will say he's never lost those roots, because some of the episodes actually take place in the computer magazine which he started writing on before he made very, very big.
Very impressive indeed. Little text, there are arguments video games have better storytelling narratives and creativity given how formulaic cinema is at the moment. Last season won for how like levels of a game it felt. Next episode is Get Out of the City, etc. It used to be video games and the screen never crossed well, but now it is getting very good. Gone with this, it is absolutely
where the
talent is. That's always a kind of a strong measure.
And also, the thing about a computer game is they have the ability to create any world and any situation they want. They're not defined by, you know, the budgetary effects of a big screen budget or the limitations of human body when it comes to stunt performing or indeed call schedules or anything like that.
Storytelling with no limits, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, then the next one is Good American Family, new episodes every Wednesday on Disney Plus. Check a listen to this.
Mommy.
Nope. Don't mommy me. Tell me what it's going to take to make you go away, to leave us alone.
You want me to go away?
You manipulated us into paying for your surgery. What else do you want? Money?
Why would I want money?
What are you doing this for then? Just torturing us for fun?
Why do you keep saying all these mean things about me?
I am not going to keep putting my children in danger. I'm not going to let you keep doing this.
Well, I have to say, you manipulated me into paying for your surgery. That line got my attention straight away. What's going on here, James?
This is an odd show, right? So this is partially inspired by a true story. And I will say it opens with, you know, not those words, but rather a very long paragraph of saying some of this is inspired by things from court records and everything we can piece together as much as we possibly can to tell the full and truest story that we can. Now, you can, if you want to a more, you know, fulsome look at it, go on to go on and watch the documentary The Curious Case of Natalia Grace, all three seasons of which are available on Discovery Plus. It runs for 14 episodes. I haven't gotten into it myself.
Okay.
But Natalia Grace has become this kind of infamous case in the US involving a couple who adopted a 7-year-old girl who had come to the US from Ukraine. She has a rare form of dwarfism, and when they adopted her, she had a number of behavioral issues, and they became convinced that she was an adult posing as a child,
right,
and trying to scam them out of money, because they had been the second family to adopt her after the first family had returned her, shall we say. And in doing so, they then dropped her off to fend for herself in an apartment.
A 7-year-old child.
Yes, despite the fact that she was only 8 at the time when they did that.
Okay.
Now, that is a very, that's a lot of drama going
on.
Yeah,
it certainly
right
is.
There.
Yeah.
And to say that they have not got, they've approached this from a very melodramatic stance. So who we heard in the clip there was Ellen Pompeo. You probably best know her as Dr. Meredith Grey on Grey's Anatomy, where she played that role for 437 episodes and is arguably the richest actress in the US at the moment, because she made an absolute fortune and probably still accrues a fortune from even the seasons she's no longer on. And she wanted to test her dramatic chops a bit more and went to this.
And she did.
And she did. Now, on the other side of the screen was Imogen Faith Reed playing Natalia Grace. You also have Mark Duplass. He's one of the Duplass brothers, who are very famous kind of indie indie filmmakers in their own right, but he appears in a number of things. The Morning Show on Apple TV, probably his biggest credit. Now, it is camp, is what I would say. If you approach this from a camp perspective,
okay,
there's probably a lot of enjoyment to be had from this. So I found it...
If camp's what you want,
yes,
this is the place to come.
100%. If you're looking for a, you know, serious, earnest drama, then don't bother.
Okay,
right?
Fair enough.
If you go approaching this as potentially so bad it's good television, then yes, there's definitely something to enjoy here. My husband was making dinner yesterday while it was on in the background, and he kept just peeking his head in from the kitchen to see what was happening, because the lines of dialogue were so corny and silly and melodramatic and over the top. The acting is not subtle or you know, the choices made are not interesting, but the whole piece kind of works together as this strange, you know, hodgepodge of absolute nonsense. I kind of like it and hate it in equal measure.
Okay, so bad it's good. Would they have set out to make something that's so bad it's good, or...
I doubt it, right? I doubt it. So it debuted in the US in March, and then Disney Plus picked, you know, it's on Hulu over there, which means it comes to Disney Plus here. Disney Plus dumped all 5 episodes at once here rather than a weekly churnout. And I'm grateful that they did, because at least then I could get a sense of the melodrama that potentially they were going for. All in, it has some very good names attached to it in terms of the the direction behind the screen.
Yeah.
Liz Garbus is one of them, a very, very well-respected director. But I think, you know, I think tonally, I just don't quite get what they're going for. If they're like, it's such a sad story, ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is a true story that this child was effectively abandoned by this couple who thought they were doing the right thing and absolutely were not doing the right thing. But it's almost played for laughs in a way that...
It's like a child is not just for Christmas, you know?
Indeed.
And on that thought, James, well, a lot of love for The Last of Us and Black Mirror so far. Maybe not that one. James, thank you very much indeed.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.